me pones un ejemplo. Entonces, si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk. Real people. Real stories. The He's Jizz Podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Jizz Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker Movement, with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. But this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. You know, a soul navigator is someone who guides individuals on their personal and spiritual journeys. It is someone that can help us explore and understand deeper aspects of their souls, consciousness, and spiritual paths. Meet Melody Kraft, author, producer, psychologist, and artist. Her professional life is richly dedicated to the exploration of spiritual and psychological well-being. As a soul navigator, she uses her expertise in psychology to guide individuals through transformative processes aimed at dissolving egoic consciousness. Melody's work also focuses on overcoming fear and rediscovering our capacity for love. She is the author of two books, a children's piece titled Finding Me, and a second book, A Smash, Get Me Out of Here, What's Beyond the Madness, for which she was recognized as a distinguished favorite in the spirituality category of 2023 New York City Big Book Award, which underscores her impactful message. Besides her writing, she has produced and hosts TV specials centered on healing, mediumship, and metaphysics. We are excited about having Melody on our show, and we are eager to learn about the ways and practices we can attain to help us emphasize a holistic approach to living more fulfilled, fearlessly. Melody, welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you, Jules. I'm so happy that you invited me to be here today.
Well, before we get started, just introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey, and how you got into this walk.
Well, I would say my journey began, as most people, as a child. And I used to think, this world doesn't make any sense. It was so inconsistent. And I saw a lot of people that were unhappy. And I thought, if people were just happy with themselves, what a different world this would be. You know, we wouldn't have the conflict that we have. You know, we would feel at peace. And so that's always been with me throughout my life. And so that's what motivated me to major in psychology. And then I discovered, to really help people, we had to go deeper than what the field of psychology offers. And so we're really now looking at the soul and, you know, the voice of the soul and listening to guidance. So that's where my focus is, helping people identify blocks that prevent them from remembering who and what they really are, which is love.
Mm. Well said. You know, according to the American Psychology Association, about 75% of people live with stress. How can you help us unpack this?
First of all, I want people to know that stress is, it's fear in disguise. So like anytime that we have doubts, that we're feeling stressed, we're feeling anxious, you know, all of these feelings are really fear. Now, I'm going to say something that may startle some people, but fear, and that when I'm saying fear, I'm including stress in it, is an illusion. Okay, people are going to say, well, it doesn't feel like an illusion. But when we think about how we become stressed, it's always because of the thoughts that we linger on. Okay, but we're very powerful as being a decision maker. We're very powerful in creating stories. So we can shift from lingering on stories that make us feel self-limited, you know, just not quite good enough, and shift from that thought into another thought that triggers of feeling safe, of feeling love, of feeling peace. Because when you, if you have that feeling of peace just for a moment, you only need it for a moment, that's enough to start extinguishing old thought patterns that make us feel less than, that make us feel stressed.
Mm. Loving your answer that you helped us understand a little bit about the illusion of what stress is, because it's really fear. And fear and stress seem to sound hand in hand. But in this case, as I'm thinking about this, I'm concerned about maybe a traumatic experience, maybe a failed experience that I had before. And because I felt like that, this might trigger this illusion of fear to kind of creep up faster than what it is. So I'm curious to understand that a little bit more. If we were to look at that from the side of the workplace, because work is where we spend most of our time, we're really at work more than what we are really at home. And this is where we are most concerned or most fearful of. Are we going to make more money? Is the company going to be okay? Am I going to meet this deadline? My boss is pressuring me. So tell us a little bit about how fear and stress in the workplace meet and what can we do when it does creep up on us.
Okay, so I'm going to go back again to how we create our thoughts. And I always tell, you know, I get a lot of people that come to me and they are stressed because of their work, the work environment. And it tends to be, there's always like one person in the mix in the office that creates problems, especially for that individual. Okay. And so I tell them, I said, I know this is stressful, but if we can shift our perception and look at it in a different way, maybe we can change this level of stress that you have. So if we look at it, stay with me on this one. If we look at it as an opportunity that this person who's really driving you up the wall is actually a teacher for you, because what's happening is they're triggering something inside of you that hasn't healed yet. And so rather than being angry at them, because that's a very toxic feeling, ask yourself, what is it that I'm believing about myself right now? Because it's not true. And that's why I'm stressed. When you identify what it is and you realize like, oh my goodness, I've been believing in this thing about myself and it's not true all this time in my life. And that's why the situation came up. And when you let it go, this is really interesting, and I've seen this happen over and over, that person who created all the stress for you leaves. No longer in your life, because they only need it to be there to help you clear it out.
Hmm. I really do see where one person, because really it is just only one person, whether it's your boss, a team member, or someone who just works with you at your pace, at your place of venue, I can see how it can become. And it's interesting how you gave it the look of the teacher, because this person, in one way or the other, does know most times that they trigger you. They do know, whether that is a nonverbal response, something that you may show physically, you're nervous, maybe you can't speak right. A lot of us go into, you know, the three F's. We either freeze, we fight, or we're fear. And at this point, they begin to understand that this is what's getting to us. And I like to symbolize this to what's called a work bully, which you can't really sue anyone for being a bully at work. But at the end of the day, they know that they have your number. And somehow, some way, if I were to think about that person as a teacher who is guiding me to become better in an area that I'm not that strong of yet, may help me. I like to think about things that I do for myself when these things do come up for me. And, you know, sometimes taking a deep breath doesn't work. But I go to some of the things that I tell my students, just stop, walk, and talk, leave that area, talk to someone that you're comfortable with, and I think you'll be better equipped for your next fight when that bully does return. I want to talk about your book, but before I get in there, I want to talk about a quote early on in the book that I read in chapter one. There are only two choices for every decision. One is based on reality and the other is an illusion. You can choose love or fear. Which world do you want to live in? Tell us about that.
Okay. So, and this is really based, for those that are familiar with The Course in Miracles, talks about this a great deal. So when we make any decision at all, we always are coming from one of two places. We're coming from a place of fear, which is the egoic consciousness, or we're coming from love, okay, which is truth. Okay, so now the egoic consciousness, I'm just going to define what the ego is. So it's just a collection of thoughts that you have about yourself that you believe are true, but they're not. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anytime, and again, the ego is always about fear. The ego is about keeping you stuck in the past. And when you're feeling constricted, you're feeling stressed, and you're just really not feeling good about yourself, it means that you're thinking and believing falsehoods about yourself. So when you are at a place where you have to make a decision about something, you want to notice, how am I feeling in this moment? Am I feeling pressured? Am I feeling stressed? And if you are, you're coming from fear. So if you base a decision from that mindset, the results are not going to turn out well. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can shift your attention away from and feeling, you know, stepping out of feeling that pressure, and shift it to a place of love. And that means listening to your intuition, because mm-hmm. your intuition is the voice of your soul. And the voice of your soul is connected to spirit. So now you're being guided by your higher self, or even a higher vibration. And so when you make a decision based on that, it's going to move you forward in your life. It's going to bring opportunities to you that you need. So if we can stay conscious, really be aware of our thoughts and know where they're coming from, then we can always make wise decisions about the choices that we make.
Mm. In many of our schools that are utilizing Dr. Mark Brackett's ruler approach, in the method, he talks about recognizing emotions, understanding them, labeling them, you know, expressing them, whether that is outward or maybe inward to self, before you regulate. I really enjoyed in your answer that you brought home for us the opportunity to kind of step away from using it as something that is defeating you, but only something that is pushing you towards your higher self. And I think that that's very useful for many people, because if I had the ability to begin to focus on when I'm at my best, I can most probably overcome anything. And this is what I see sometimes in sports when people say he's or she's in the zone, meaning that person has blocked out every and any possible distractor that may show up. I want to talk more about love and fear, because this is really something that was beautiful and poetic. These are two powerful emotions. We know that love is about warmth and connection. And the other one may be about feeling insecure, anxious, and sometimes you become avoidant, where you shut down. Can you tell us about the two and how we can remove fear by using love, if that's possible in a situation?
It is possible. But first, I want to say something about, kind of define a little bit about what is love. Let me rephrase that. There's only one thing really in this world that motivates us. Just one. We may think it's money, status, and all that, but it's not. It's love. Mm. Okay. Even when it is expressed in rather bizarre ways. So people are either extending love or they're asking for love. And often when people are asking for love, it comes in ways where you don't identify it as love, because they're just not at a place yet where they feel what the essence of what they really are is love. Mm. That makes sense. Okay. Yes. So the love is truth. It's what you really are. Anything outside of that is not real. So that means when we're in fear, we are in that moment of illusions, of believing that we're powerless, that we're limited, you know, and we're thinking about all the things that we're not capable of doing. But when, if we can just take a moment, take a pause, and there are some really good techniques in learning how to do this. So you can shift your attention and your feeling from fear into a place where you feel safe, because often it's a safety issue with people when they're in fear. What am I going to lose? You know, and when someone feels threatened, what they're feeling threatened about is they feel like they have to protect their identity. But they're really trying to protect the illusionary identity of what they think they are, because you don't have to protect the reality of what you are. So, you know, our whole soul journey is all about shifting from being in this illusionary world and shifting it to a place of love. So that's why we have all these experiences and being triggered by people that drive us up the wall. You know, they're giving us an opportunity to look at ourselves. Am I believing in an illusion or not? And as we keep peeling back the illusions, you know, the soul keeps rising and you're feeling more and more free, more limitless, because the reality is that we are limitless.
You know, financial fear is another big one, right? People assume that they can't live beyond their means. Sometimes they think they can't afford college. Sometimes they can't afford to pay rent. And somehow, some way, they get by. Somehow, some way, they make it. The illusion of fear is evident, because had they not, they wouldn't have gotten as far as they got. And sometimes they have one child, two children, three children, and live successfully within their means, because it's up to you to focus on how much more you want to get out of yourself, in life, in your career, etc. So I did see that, and I did appreciate that if we put that shift, if we made that tilt within ourselves, most probably we can see fear in slow motion and say, no, love is the true answer. Really enjoyed your answer there. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit more about you and your personal challenge and how you got into the practice of being a soul navigator.
It wasn't an abrupt thing. It was a series of awakenings. You know, and awakenings generally are triggered by, oh my gosh, you know, I can't believe I did this, or making a mistake. You know, we tend to learn by the hard knocks. We want to start making those knocks softer and softer and then anticipating them. Mm-hmm. And so we become wiser as opposed to learning everything the hard way. I actually am not even too sure how to answer that, because I cannot pinpoint one specific moment when I decided this is what I need to do. It was a very gradual process of changing the way I was thinking about my life and life in general.
All right. So let's dig a little bit more then. Let's talk about the world of mediumship, you know, the pseudoscientific, if you will, meditation practice that helps us connect sometimes with familiar spirits, sometimes with people who are no longer with us. How did you learn you had this ability?
Well, as a child, I often knew what was going to happen before it was going to happen. Mm. And I never quite understood that. So I really didn't know what to do with it. And when I was in college, sometimes I would share with people what I saw around them. And I discovered a number of people found it uncomfortable. And I thought, well, this ability should not be used to make people uncomfortable. So I decided I'm just not going to use it until I have a better understanding of it and use it for good. And so although I did use it for myself, because working with people and having this ability to be able to read their energy field is really helpful in working with people. because you know where they're coming from and you can help them and make things smoother. But it really wasn't until much later in life that I realized, when I started a serious meditation practice and I kept getting stronger and stronger, this ability to connect on the other side. And then I took formal training. So I learned the classical way of doing mediumship, which is different from psychic readings. With psychic readings, you're just simply reading the energy field of another individual, because everything about their past, their present, and to some extent their future is in their energy field. So anyone who has a large extended energy field can do this. And I also, everyone has psychic abilities, whether they recognize it or not, and how much they develop it. But mediumship is about raising your vibration to match the vibration of those on the other side. And so the only purpose of mediumship is healing. That's it. It's not for entertainment. It's just for healing. And so, you know, it's like when a family comes to me, I remember once this husband and wife, they were very depressed. And their son, it was their teenage son, who had died. And the police said he had committed suicide. And they didn't believe it. And so when I was able to connect with him, he described what happened. And it was not suicide. It was an accident. And so for them, that was healing, because the thought that their child would make a choice to leave was really, you know, difficult to bear. So it's about healing.
Wow. And that right there is an amazing way to take a look at that superpower, if you will, the ability to provide others with a sense of healing. It's hard to understand sometimes that as you were growing up and you started to develop the strengths in this area, that you may have not felt maybe different at times and said, is there something wrong with me? Were there times like that for you?
I never, you know, for me, having psychic abilities and mediumship faculty felt totally normal. I always did feel like I was out of the box because I didn't know anybody else who had these abilities around me. So I couldn't really talk about it. And being an artist, you know, people always have this funny idea, well, artists are just strange.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I'll just let them think that artists are just strange.
But you know what was like interesting to me, and I got tons of jokes, but I'm just saying to myself, they never played that game with you. I'm thinking of a number. Guess which one it is, because I'm sure Melody cannot play with us. Make sure she does not play in the game. She can be a judge. She definitely cannot play. Oh my God. Thank you. This is so nice. And you talked about the ability that we all have. And I know that some of us have had these premonitions, and sometimes we have these situations that we begin to think about. We say, I knew that that was going to happen, or I saw that happen before that it happened, and so on. Are there more people that have come to you to say, can you help me be better at this because I'm struggling? Am I a superpower? Yes or no? Have you had that?
Yes. Yeah. So I ended up actually teaching classes on a weekly basis for a number of years at one of the metaphysical chapels in my area in DC. And so we usually had a group around 16 people who had mediumistic abilities or either psychic abilities. And we had one lady that had what I would call the highest mediumistic ability you can have. What that means is she bypasses the level of gathering and distributing information. She goes to a higher vibration and she can heal people. Yes.
Yeah, make sure you give me her phone number. Wow.
She would do that. A lot of people, after about 2 years of teaching mediumship, a lot of people had a good faculty part, but they'd get stuck at a certain level. And they couldn't move on. And I realized it's not the lack of their ability. It's they have blocks that's preventing them to really trust themselves and their intuition and their other abilities. And so I started shifting what I was teaching and how I was working with helping people, let's identify this resistance that you have. Because it's the resistance and the fear pieces that are keeping you from expanding these gifts that you've brought into this lifetime. And when once I started doing that, then I had more people coming to me who were not mediums, because everyone deals with resistance in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's always, let's identify what they are, because I think of it, you know, as having, you know, a veil over your face. Okay, let's say you've got 10 veils over your face, so you can't see very well. Mm-hmm. So if we move one, gets a little bit more clear, but when we keep moving each veil, your vision keeps getting more and more clear. So these veils are illusionary beliefs that you believe about yourself.
Hmm.
So it's always about false beliefs that keep us stuck in anything that we want to do. And I truly believe that people are limitless and that everyone brings in soul gifts and a very specific purpose that they need to do in their life. And it's for developing their own capacity to remember who and what they are. And it's also to be of service to others, because as an individual heals, their mere presence around someone else can have a healing effect. They don't even have to do anything. Because they're generating this energy of love. So the more you let go of resistance and become who you are, you really become a powerhouse for healing, just to be yourself.
Great stuff. Tell us a little bit about when you go into practice, do you have clients request that you only work using the psychology framework? Do they ask for specific areas? And how do you determine what's the best step? Is there a process for you when you're helping clients understand which line of practice?
Often when people will ask for something specific, they're really not too sure what it is they really need. So my approach is to be very open and just sit there and just feel into their energy for a while and listen very carefully to what they say. And then what I do is there's just kind of a knowing that comes over me what it is that they need. So that's, I don't know how.
You know, in your answer, I'm listening to something that's really basic. There's a lot of people, including myself, that I always say, you know, I want to become a better listener. And it's something that's amazing. When I have put into practice saying, I'm not going to be the one talking, I'm not going to be the one that's running the meeting or whatever, I'm just going to lay back and listen and look at how others are reacting. Usually you come back with great answers, great intuitive ways of problem solving. And that's that area that I believe that you're talking about. If I listen closely, I'm able to make just decisions about complicated situations.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit more about this, but let's get into some of what we're here to also talk about is your book, Get Me Out of Here, What's Beyond the Madness. Why was it important for you to write this book?
I knew there, I wasn't the only one on this planet who thinks this world is a little crazy. Mm-hmm. We need to do something about it. But I also know that, you know, I do tend to see things, you know, from a very broad perspective about social change, but I also know the way we really change is on an individual level. So when one person heals, they're no longer in conflict. So they're not going to create conflict with another person.
Hmm.
So the more people that heal on an individual level, the less conflict we're going to have in this world. You know, we can change an organization, we can change structure, and we can make it work when you really believe and have a passion about what you do. So let's say we create a structure and an organization to help people. Now, the person who's created this, that has a passion about it, reaches a point where they need to do something different and they leave. So now someone else comes in, and if that person doesn't have the same passion, it doesn't matter how good that structure or that organization is, it'll start caving in on itself. Hmm. So that's why it's so important for each person to heal themselves and be willing to do what it takes. Generally, you know, we can't force people to change. They have to be ready in their life. And they say, okay, you know, I'm really tired with the way my life is going, and I know I need to make some changes, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And when a person reaches that stage in their unfoldment, that's a beautiful place to be, because now they're going to see change. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. Mm-hmm. Actually, the journey of the soul is really very simple, but it's not easy. It's actually the hardest thing we will ever have to do.
Hmm. Are there, or were there times that as you were writing this book, you had your own emotions to worry about, that you thought to yourself, man, I don't know why I'm even doing this. Like, I feel like not doing this. Were there times that you thought about that? I'll bet that the book got recognized as a smash. You got distinguished honors for this. Were you ever in that rut where you to yourself said, no, I don't know if this is it?
Not when I was writing the book. I mean, I was very resistant to writing the book. I've always had a sense my entire life that I was going to write a book. And I was resistant to it. And I always had people encouraging me, telling me I need to write a book. And it wasn't until probably, I guess I started writing it about 7 years ago. And I didn't even know quite sure what I was going to write. And I spent a couple of months just creating outlines and mind mapping, trying to structure it. And I thought, none of this is working. So I threw it all away. And I thought, I'm just going to sit every evening for 2 hours. And I'm going to get very quiet. And I'm just going to allow myself to be guided to say what I need to say. Hmm. And so there was no organization or structure to it. It would just flow. Hmm. And so I did this for 2 years. And so I really didn't know what it was going to be until it was done.
Oh my God. You know that I have a link on my website for your book. And thank you so much for allowing me to get a copy. I am going to read it and stay connected with you and tell you how I was able to connect with this myself. It's a friendly guide. You talk about stories and people and how they have helped themselves and sometimes get stuck in situations. Let's put that love and fear into that, you know, combination there. Again, the illusion in the one that we're seeking, which is love. Were there times that you thought to yourself, this book is never going to end because I keep getting all these stories in my head? Or when did you know that you had it where you needed it to go?
Because I'm very, I listen to how I feel. And I got reached a point, I thought, okay, I'm done. I'm just done. Okay. And someone asked me once, you know, what was it like? Why I was writing it? Was it fun? And I can't say that it was fun. I felt compelled to write it. I could not stop once I started. And so I drew upon a lot of my own personal experiences and also stories of clients that I worked with. And there are a few stories in there that are allegories, but they just came to me. I don't know. It was really marvelous. The chapter on love, I remember when I was writing it, I had the story of this one woman that I worked with. And then I needed to write about what exactly is love. Hmm. And I wasn't sure how to put that down on paper. So I sent up this request to the universe. And I said, I need help with this one. Tell me what to write. And as soon as I said that, it was like the words just started flowing through me. It was like I was taking dictation. Hmm. So that one chapter really flowed quite well. So I have to give credit to Spirit for that chapter.
Well said, because I think that many a times when we are struggling, some of us may be reluctant to ask for support in any way. we believe that we can do it ourselves, and that talk of resistance that we just alluded to earlier pops up for us. I think people need to request one another's help. I think people should rely on one another in order to kind of stick together. You kind of heard me at the beginning, you know, we are strong as individuals, but we are unstoppable when we unite. There is a lot to be said about team, about another type of guidance, whether in person, whether spiritual. There are so many ways for us to tap in. And thank you so much for letting us in into that side of your world of writing, because it's really cool. You went from a children's book, and now here I am. I'm going to go into spirituality. Talk to us a little bit more about spirituality. Is it the meditation that happens the most? Where do you go with this?
So meditation, I think, is essential for anyone that has reached a point in their life where they want to begin their spiritual journey. Because when you're meditating, you're quieting your mind. That means you have gaps between your thoughts. Those quiet moments, those gaps, those moments of silence, that's when you're open to receive messages or, you know, wisdom, you know, however it comes to you that you need to hear in that moment. You know, we have to remember, no one is alone on this planet, in this world. You know, we all have support on the other side. So when we get quiet, those on the other side who have a higher vibration, who have a level of wisdom more than we have currently, they want to help us. So when we're quiet and our mind is not busy, that's when they can get through. And so often, you know, some people hear, some people see, sometimes it's simply a knowingness. You just kind of feel like, oh, this is the right thing that I need to do next. And there's a sense of peace that comes over you. So also, I want to say this is really important with meditation, is when you get really deep into meditation, you will have experiences of what you really are. That means you will feel peace. You know, we can't find peace out there. It's about remembering peace. And so when you have that moment where you remember what peace feels like, you're now in touch with your authentic self. And you only have to experience it just for a few moments or a few seconds. Once you truly experience that, you want it again. And so, you know, it encourages you to sit again in meditation. So I recommend that people develop a meditation discipline, a practice where they do it on a regular basis. A lot of people will tell me, well, I just can't do it. You know, I have a busy mind. But it's like anything that you learn, you got good at. You practiced it. So I said, okay, well, do you think you could just be quiet for 3 minutes? Just 3 minutes. Do that in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening. What you're doing is you're developing a new pattern, because the brain likes patterns. And so your mind will start recognizing, oh, I'm developing a new pattern. I'm getting quiet. I'm shutting down. This is also a great way of reducing stress, because in those moments where you're quiet, it reduces your stress.
You know, you kind of took the words out of my mouth. I was going to tell you, many, many people who do struggle with it is because they say that they can't. But many a times you begin to understand that they haven't put the practice. And I like how you broke it down. You can do this just like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, just for 3 minutes. And really don't pace yourself around the timing. Just think about that you're sitting there to relax. And I believe that you will get better, because you'll stop paying attention to the time, how long you did it and not. And once you make this a ritual for yourself, you begin to get better. I cannot wait to put this in practice myself, because I do some meditating and I'm pretty good at it, I want to say. However, there are moments where timing and schedule and whatnot may or may not impact. But I like how you said, just take 3 minutes. That should be suffice to get you started on this. What are some tips or strategies that are in your book that you can share with our listeners?
In terms of meditation?
In terms of anything that's inside the book.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so here's, I think I talked about this in the book. One way that you can get a grip on stress when you're really stressful in the moment, okay, is we breathe about 14 times a minute. If you stop and slow your breath between 5 to 7 times per minute, it calms you down. When you're calm, you can't be stressed. And so, you know, if you do this just for a few minutes, it's just it's a great technique to instantly reduce stress. Just slow your breath down to 5 to 7 times a minute.
I wanted to talk a little bit about these stages that are in your book, which I found quite fascinating. There's a piece where you have the mind virus, which is something that you reference. I think it's chapter 2. What is that? So we can understand a bit.
Okay. So this is just a term that it seemed appropriate for describing what illusionary beliefs are. Anytime we're believing a false idea, a false thought about ourselves, it infects us in a way that makes us sick.
Let's talk on more about the stages. There's a piece that you go into. It says, beyond the darkness of the ego, the conflict between the ego and the true self, there are stages that you talk about. This is stage 3. Can you tell us a little bit more about the stages?
Okay. So stage 1 is often referred to as the camel stage. Now, the reason why I decided to use that term in the book is that the camel is an animal of burden. So it walks the desert without water. So it's living a life of burden. So individuals who are in stage 1, they feel this overwhelming sense of being burdened. And, you know, it's like they're living on sand, and sand shifts and changes all the time. And so there's no feeling of being grounded. So it's a very fearful time. But when an individual reaches a point where it's like, you know, say, uncle, I can't deal with this anymore, that there has to be another way. There has to be a better way. And I need to change. When a person reaches that point where they realize they have to change and they're willing to change, they step into stage 2, which is called the lion stage. And it's called the lion stage because the lion kills off the illusionary beliefs. So now in stage 2, there are many, many sub-stages, and there's different levels of consciousness as we progress. But basically what we're doing in stage 2 is we find ourselves fluctuating and vacillating back and forth between intuition and doubt, between fear and love, and we're going back and forth all the time. It's like we have 1 foot in each world, one in this material world and one in the world of spirit. And so this is a world of conflict, and that's how it plays out. And in stage 2, when we start releasing resistance to truth, we begin to elevate our consciousness. So now we're leaving stage 1, which was totally the egoic consciousness, which is all about fear. In stage 2, you know, we're dealing with fear and we're also dealing with love. We're going back and forth all the time. But we're recognizing on some level, we got to get rid of this ego because it's not helping me. It wants to drag me back to stage 1. So as we keep identifying pieces of resistance and what's not true, and extinguishing them, we go from the egoic consciousness to we have moments where we experience what's called super consciousness. And in those moments, it's like, how can I describe this? It's those light bulb moments of insight, the moments of beauty. Okay. And as we keep continuing eliminating resistance, they become more frequent. Okay. Eventually, and we're all going to get there, we reach a point where we're in stage three, which is referred to as the innocent child. And that just simply means we now recognize we've always been innocent. You know, we never really needed to be guilty about things. And we reach a level of constant super consciousness and even Christ consciousness. Okay. And I always recommend it to everyone who's on the spiritual journey to read Yogananda's book, The Autobiography of a Yogi.
Mm-hmm.
It gives beautiful examples of sages who have reached that level of consciousness and the natural abilities that they have of healing and having experiences that we would consider miracles, but which really are natural occurrences. So in stage three, it's all about love. In stage one, it's all about fear. In stage two, it's like we're making that transition.
You know, I was just about to say, the sand shifts. You don't feel grounded. And it's that early stage that I think that people don't want to go through the stages to get to their best self, to get to that super consciousness. I feel like people just want the solution. Like, this is going wrong. But that teaching aspect, that learning aspect has to happen through those stages so that when you are hit with a similar situation, you know how to navigate, you know how to bounce back, if that's even there. Thank you for that. I wanted to ask, this book is filled with stories, and some of it is your personal stuff that you've put in there as well. Is there a client, is there a situation that you think about to yourself and you say, Melody Kraft, this is the reason why I keep doing this work, because of this case, because of these cases, because of these people, because of this person? Is there such a case that you remember often, or something that you can recall really touches your heart and makes you want to do this work with more, you know, rigor?
I have to say, I don't know if there's any one individual case. After this book came out, I had one lady contact me, and she said she bought it, and she said she read it twice, that there were specific chapters in it that really spoke to her. She felt like I was writing it directly to her, and I've had a few other people say that also. And so that always makes me smile, because I know that those words help someone. So it was quite lovely. And I get excited, because a lot of the people I work with in the early days who just didn't believe they could do what they really wanted to do in life are now have their own business doing what they love. And so I find that exciting, because they've let go of the resistance. They're happy with what they're doing. They're finding joy in their life. And what that means is they're extending that to other people. So it just creates a ripple. Everyone that I work with that gets it and moves on, then they do it for someone else. So I find that really wonderful.
I do love that. The fact that they are helping others heal really spreads your message even further. Really do love that. When we're thinking about, what are your next moves? Are you going to write another book? What do you plan to do? I know you do workshops, TV shows. What are you trying to do next?
I've been thinking about actually creating a newsletter on Substack. You know, I've been encouraged to do social media. I really don't like all these real quick little things that you do. It just doesn't feel right for me. You know, I like to go a little bit deeper and spend more time and really get to the bottom, the cause of suffering, because that's how we remove it. And so I thought, if I work with Substack it will allow me to write more lengthy articles that deal with the human issue and how we can get out of suffering and how we can have joy in our life. So that's one new thing that I would like to do.
Good stuff. What do you do for self-care, friend? Doesn't sound like you have too much time. What else can you tell us that you do to take care of thyself?
Well, I do meditation.
Oh, okay.
Read and try to get enough sleep.
Okay.
And then I do have a small group of people that I've been working with for a long time, and I have what's called a home circle. So like every other week, they come over to my place and we sit around and we meditate and then we eat and we laugh a lot.
Oh, great stuff. You know, the floor is yours. Before we let go, tell us, what do you want our listeners to remember? Give us some pointers as to what you think they need to do to become better versions of themselves in that journey to find love.
Okay. So what I really want people to know, and I think this is important because a lot of people do feel alone and misunderstood, but I want everyone to know that they're not alone. It's not possible to be alone, that everyone has support from the world of spirit. And everyone is destined to succeed. Trust that, because it's true.
We are all destined to succeed. When the world's pressures bring you down, press play on the highlights of your mental clips, unleashing fond memories which infuse joy into your heart, into your soul. Get on the level, because on this platform, way too often we were overlooked or labeled and put in boxes. But this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show, coming to another town near you real soon. We're out.
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. We're always here for you. Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just at He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa, this is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde de la Rosa, esto va dedicado a ti, mamá. Te extraño mucho.